You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of AIDS 2008, the 17th International AIDS Conference. The conference took place in Mexico City from August 3rd through August 8th, 2008.
This is Terry Wilder with The Body. I've just finished watching a presentation by Professor Mark Bauer of Chelsea and Westminster Hospital in the United Kingdom. He's just presented information on Castleman's disease in persons living with HIV. Could you please tell us what Castleman's disease is?
So Castleman's disease is a rare lymphoproliferative disorder, which is monotypic, that is lambda light chain restricted, but is not monoclonal, so it's a polyclonal illness. It's really a form of pre-lymphoma, if you like, driven by the human herpes virus 8, the same virus that causes Kaposi's sarcoma.
Can you talk about how it is diagnosed?
So this is the real problem with Castleman's disease, and even in the best centres, it often takes many months before the diagnosis is made, because people who have HIV and Castleman's disease present with very non-specific symptoms and signs. They usually have intermittent high fevers and night sweats. They usually have lymph gland enlargement and splenomegaly. And they often have anemia, low albumins, and polyclonal hypergammaglobulinemia. So none of these individual signs or symptoms are sufficient to establish the diagnosis, and there's a wide differential diagnosis. The only way that you can really make the diagnosis is by doing either a lymph node excision biopsy or a splenectomy, if that's the only site of disease. That's why it's so frequently takes a long time for the diagnosis to be established in people with HIV.
Can you talk about the treatment plan for the person who has been diagnosed with Castleman's disease and HIV?
Following the establishment of a diagnosis of Castleman's disease, there is as yet no gold standard best established treatment. There are no head-to-head randomized studies of what are the best and most effective agents in the treatment of HIV-associated multicentric Castleman's disease, and the majority of the information on the management comes from relatively small published series from two or three centres, to be honest. It does appear, though, if you talk to most of the clinicians treating a sizable number of patients with Castleman's disease, that the optimal treatment involves a combination of single-agent chemotherapy, usually with an agent called etoposide, and monoclonal antibody therapy with anti-CD20 monoclonal antibody known as rituximab. In addition, there is also some data to suggest that where the spleen is massively enlarged, removing the spleen surgically improves the outcome. Following that sort of treatment, the patient should achieve a clinical remission where all their symptoms have gone, and there is some debate as to whether additional treatment at that time can reduce the risk of relapse. So some centres have tried using maintenance rituximab monoclonal antibody therapy, and other centres have tried using anti-HHV8, anti-herpes virus agents like ganciclovir and valganciclovir, both as treatment and more recently as maintenance therapy. But really, there's no established best treatment at present.
Do you have any idea what percentage of people living with HIV have been diagnosed with Castleman's disease? Do you have any idea?
Well, all I can tell you about is the incidence of Castleman's within our cohort at Chelsea and Westminster Hospital. So that's the only data there is about incidence of Castleman's disease. And that's a prospective cohort of 11,000 patients, 52,000 patient years follow-up. So it's probably the second largest, perhaps the largest HIV single centre cohort in Europe. And we've looked at the incidence of Castleman's disease in that cohort over the last 25 years, And the overall incidence is 4 per 10,000 patient years. Now, let's just compare that, you know, so that you've got an idea. That's about 1/50th of the incidence of Kaposi's sarcoma, which is a disease caused by the same virus.
And when patients are diagnosed with Castleman's disease, when they have an HIV diagnosis, do you have an idea of what their prognosis is? Is this something that can be put into remission? Is this something that is going to cause their death?
Okay, so until perhaps turn of this millennium, the best data on that was from Eric Oxenhendler's group in Paris, who suggested that the median survival following a diagnosis of HIV-associated Castleman's disease was 14 months. However, there have been recent dramatic improvements in the therapy of Castleman's, with a recognition of the need to give chemotherapy and immunotherapy. And in most more recent studies, the survival rates are very, very much higher than that. So, for example, there is a study that we published recently in the Annals of Internal Medicine of 20-ish patients treated with rituximab at the first diagnosis of Castleman's disease, and the two-year survival was 95%. Only a single patient had passed away, and actually that patient was already on intensive care by the time the diagnosis was established. What I suspect, although I cannot quote you a manuscript showing it, is that the majority of patients, even who are achieve a remission of their Castleman's disease, will at some point in the future relapse. So unlike most HIV-associated cancers, this is a disease that keeps coming back and will need retreatment. So often the treatment-free intervals are several years, but I think these patients need very careful monitoring, particularly with HHV8 viral load, to look for early relapses so that we don't spend 6 months establishing the diagnosis of relapse in the way that we spend 6 months establishing the initial diagnosis.
My final question is, do you think that this is sexually transmitted?
The transmission of the virus, Kaposi's sarcoma herpes virus, between individuals is an area of some debate. It is, if you look at studies from Africa, it's clear that a small percentage of infants under the age of 3 have acquired this virus, and it is suggested that some of that may be vertical transmission, mother-to-child transmission of HHV8. There's then some horizontal non-sexual transmission, particularly amongst young children, and later on, one suspects, sexual transmission. Now then, let's look at which body fluids this virus is most prevalent in, and the highest levels, by far the highest levels, are present in the saliva. A bit like Epstein-Barr virus, this is a virus that's probably transmitted in nurseries and creches with children dribbling and all the rest, and I'm sure you'll have to rewrite what I said to make it sound a bit more PC, and also subsequently through saliva exchange and kissing. So just like Epstein-Barr virus, yes, you could say that kissing was a sex act, but not always, perhaps.
Thank you so much for your time.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
This has been a report on the 17th International AIDS Conference from The Body Pro. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/AIDS2008.